This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Speaking of college football, that's where we will start in this Friday's
Wall of Sound. The Wall of Sound is a function of this studio. There's no doubt about it.
As I was driving home yesterday, got a chance to check out Dave Doran on with our afternoon dynamic duo of Joe Ovius and Joe Giglio. They call them the OG. And what is interesting is that rivalries in college are way more about fans than they are players, because so often players don't, especially when we're talking about rivalries that are not conference games, sometimes the players have never experienced it. Theoretically, they're only around for a short period of time. So, but Dave, what Dave Doran does, though, is that he does explain to his team on, you know, regarding what the rivalry means and some past history.
I always educate our team on history of who we're playing. But I don't dwell on things that none of these guys were a part of that. We're a lot different football team, a lot different staff. We're in a different place than we were 6 years ago. And so, you know, it's not really a comparison. I think it's just, you talk about, hey, you know, we had a team go down there and have 13 penalties and lose a one possession game. I mean, I think it's good teachable information for the guys. And that's kind of what you use it for more than anything with the team.
I think I've always thought this about colleges. The real anger in rivalries is more about fan versus fan. The real anger in the rivalries, the real heated part of it. That sometimes that translates down to player versus player too. Dave Doran also talked about this particular Wolfpack team. There are so many guys who have been around forever.
Probably across the board, if you look at teams in college football, it was this way last year, you know, with some of the guys that came back, but there's just occasional opportunities for teams to be really experienced, really old, if players come back for their extra year. And we had several, not just players, but some of our best players do that. So it is a unique team that way, and probably in my lifetime won't have many opportunities, you know, to coach a team as old as this.
It really is remarkable how many good players have chosen for whatever reason. Sometimes some of them choose because they want to, you know, maybe have a historic NC State season. Some of them are coming back to improve where they might go in the draft. But man, they are experienced to say the least. All right. Chip Patterson on Wednesday and I had a conversation about what this game was ultimately going to come down to. I think it comes down to NC State and their offensive mindset. Are they in attack mode? Because that's what I would like to see for them. I think that's their best way to really maximize this season. I wouldn't be afraid of making a few more mistakes because I think their defense is good enough to overcome it. Chip thinks this game comes down to something exactly opposite that.
I think that the ECU defense with, you know, a decent amount of experience might be a little bit overlooked and underrated in terms of how important they are to the Pirates' success, not just in this game, but over the course of the season. And I think it brings it back to, it brings it back to a conversation that we've had, frankly, for like 2 months now, where I look at NC State and I look at the ceiling of the quarterback who throws an amazing ball and takes care of it. Great on third down, great in the red zone, 35 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, almost 3,500 yards. Like, all that stuff is all very true. But as a unit, do you think that NC State overwhelms the opponent? Like, is it a really dominant offense?
No, they haven't been.
Yeah, I just, if ECU's defense can cause some trouble, keep this game a little close, you know, get into a good rhythm, prevent NC State from being able to get a leg up and then ride the defense on their way to a 2-touchdown win, for example, then you start to bring into factor the intangibles,
right?
You know, ECU playing loose, Dowdy Ficklin absolutely rocking, like those, that is why I say that the game itself, it's kind of, I think matchup wise, is on whether ECU's defense can cause some problems for Devin Leary and NC State's offense.
All could be very true. And again, I tried to apologize at the front of this because I think that East Carolina's season is going to be pretty good. Although when we talked to Steven Igo yesterday, when I asked him what would be a good season, and he'd like 6 or 7 wins.
Yeah.
So they went 7-5 a year ago. Mm-hmm. But of course, their non-conference schedule is different this year than it was last year. But they went 7-5 last year. Like, with an experienced quarterback like Holt Naylor's and the running backs you got coming back, and you know they've got, you know, familiarity on offense. If their offensive and defensive lines are, you know, good enough, I mean, I would hope that they would be better. But the American is also very good, and we're watching a couple of teams at the top of the American: Cincinnati, Houston, Central Florida, who are all headed to the Big 12. Those teams are very, very good. All right, to the NFL. Former Wolfpack quarterback Russell Wilson just signed a new contract with the Denver Broncos. $245 million over 5 years, $165 million guaranteed. I'm not going to editorialize the deal, which I believe to be a little crazy, but that's fine. Wilson, on what he loves most about the contract that does not involve decimals.
I think the best part about it all is just the people that I get to be around. I think with Coach Hackett's leadership every day on a daily basis, how he gets the guys going, his focus, his attention to detail, our quarterback room with Coach Kubiak and Justin Allen and just the rest of the guys, Brett and Josh. I get to go in a QB room every single day and just push and push and push and learn and learn.
Gosh, it's so awesome. By the way, how much bass was in that microphone?
Dennis. All of it. All of it.
My gosh. Can somebody give me a little treble? I just need a little bit of treble. It's all about that bass.
Yes.
So that's what I was told. Russell Wilson is a football writer's dream. He is. He just is a football writer's dream. The people. All right. I heard a question on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning about, is Russell Wilson the third best quarterback in the AFC West? I think he probably is.
Yeah.
But I think you can make a case that he's the second or the fourth.
Yeah.
I think you could make either of those cases.
Yeah.
Justin Herbert has super skills and super talent, but ultimately, is he really better than Wilson? I don't know the answer. We'll find that out this year. And I think a lot of people do underestimate Derek Carr, who is getting better and better. He has definitely improved over the last 3 or 4 years, and he also might be better than Russell Wilson. I don't know. The truth is somewhere between 2 and 4. But like third? Yeah, it's probably safe. All right. To another quarterback in another division, Dak Prescott. And this is all about, this is something we've heard every year. Every single year about Dallas. It's time. It's time. It's time. Here's Dak on the season coming up.
It's all excitement. It is. It's truly a privilege to be the quarterback of this team, to be the leader of these guys, offense, defense, this coaching staff that we have. Especially with everything being said about us, you know what I mean? The lack of what we have is keep writing, keep talking. We're ready to go play.
Okay. Keep writing, keep talking.
But we've heard this forever.
Yeah.
Dallas's last Super Bowl was 1996.
Yeah, the 95-96 season.
Right, I think it's 96. I mean, that's so long ago for this franchise.
Yeah.
It's, in many ways, it's like the Yankees. If the Yankees had gone 25 years without a World Series title, then, yeah, a lot would be written and a lot would be criticized. The Yankees went from 1978 to 1995. between that. I think that's their longest drought since they won their first. I believe 78 to 95 was their longest drought between World Series titles. 61 to 77 was another one. I think I have that right. But it's been a long time for the Cowboys. And they sort of look the same. And no Tyron Smith again at left tackle. He's out. We'll see. A lot is on Dak Prescott. Although I think Dallas's defense will continue to be pretty good. But a lot is on Dak Prescott to get this done. Mm-hmm. All right, we will take a short break. We'll come back. We have the rewind. Josh Graham from Sports Hub Triad. Travis Hancock from WFNZ in Charlotte. Two huge college football games and the Panthers coming up. Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, let's say I have more than $1 million balance in my 401k.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. How can that actually come back and bite me?
Well, because, and this is a thing that we it's a mirage. You see mirages. I've ridden in the desert before. You see what's water ahead, but it's not there. Well, your financial mirage is thinking that that total balance in your 401k or your IRA is yours. We have two people that want to get a hold of it, two uncles, Uncle North Carolina and Uncle Sam.
Right.
Both of them are going to do some damage to that balance. Depending on what kind of other income you have, you could lose 40% of your value. So if you're looking at $1 million IRA, maybe it's only worth $600,000 to you. So how do we get around this? Well, you don't get around it because you end up in jail if you try to do that.
But
you can do tax planning to minimize the effect of taxation into the future. The tax train is coming, Adam. We need to make sure to minimize the effect of the derailment of our financial accounts. And for the next 10 people, we'll do it at no cost or obligation. Put together your very own tax and retirement plan.
800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter. Our NFL City Tour continues at the bottom of the hour. We are ticking off all of them. We will close a week from yesterday on the afternoon of the NFL season opener. We will close with Charlotte. That will be our final city. We have only bangers left. We have Houston. That will be today. New Orleans. That will be Tuesday. And Miami. That will be Wednesday. I have not done this in a while. We've just done other things, but we are doggone close to the real start of football season. In fact, college football really begins this week. It's time to round table, so let's round table.
Camelot. Camelot. It's only a model.
This is just a fun way to talk to fun people. Here's a fun person, Travis Hancock, WFNZ in Charlotte. Mac Attack guy. I appreciate your time, Travis. Thank you very much for doing this.
Hey, no problem. Always love a good Friday roundtable. No other better way to do it than a roundtable on a Friday. So let's do this thing.
And we've got Josh Graham, Sports Hub Triad, who every once in a while decides he wants to do 6 hours of radio on a given day, like he did last Thursday and Friday. And I should have had you on all day today.
Do 12 hours of radio in 2 days, then do 15 minutes with T-Bone. I didn't know T-Bone was going to be here.
Awesome.
I also did not know it was going to be Josh Graham, so this completely changes the whole dynamic of what this roundtable could be.
Second thoughts everywhere.
But at least he went to school with Chris Paul, which West Forsyth High School just named the gym after him yesterday. I don't know if anything at West Forsyth High School is named after T-Bone.
It will be.
Real quick, Adam, I photoshopped my name yesterday on the court over Chris Paul's name. And there are people all over social media in our building in Charlotte that think it's real. I have people that employ me that congratulated me today on the basketball court. That thing went somewhere. I didn't know it was going. Now right. I truly believe my name's on the basketball court.
Before we continue on this, and this is no slight to you, Josh, at all, at T-Bone WFNZ, Travis Hancock is a must follow. You are awesome. So much fun on Twitter. All right, let's get to topics so I can pretend that we're actually doing a round table, even though this table is not round. Let's start up at the Rock at Kid Brewer Stadium. Does anybody know why? I'll start with you, Josh. Do you have any idea why this went from Carolina by 1.5 to App by 1.5 in a day?
First off, about the follow thing, I felt like the Tin Man when Dorothy went straight up to the lion and said, "I'm going to miss you the most," while the other ones are just standing there. But getting to the football game real quick, the reason this happened is because people are buying the story that North Carolina is wounded or an underdog, or that last year was what this year is going to look like. And you know who played perfectly into it? Mack Brown on Monday. Nobody loves the position that North Carolina's in more than Mack Brown selling on Monday, saying verbatim, "Odds are against us. Oh, little old Carolina." And usually you would just laugh at that when you see Saban or somebody like that talk about when they're playing Bryant or somebody. Shout out to Bryant for beating FIU yesterday, by the way. "Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. This is going to be tough. This is going to be brutal for us." But people are actually buying it. And I think last Saturday you looked at it and the offense looked great, but the defense didn't against Florida A&M. It led to this line being dropped. And to the point where this narrative, I hate that word, but it fits here, has been built that App State is a favorite, even though North Carolina will always have more talent than Appalachian State, especially after they have three top 15 recruiting classes in a row.
What do you think, Travis?
I think it's based off of timing a little bit. I think, you know, in time with Drake May and the backs that UNC has, they're eventually – you know, they're going to be favored in these games, but it's the second game for them. It's actually week one of the season, but yet their second game. So I think over time, they'll get that respect to be favored like North Carolina was a couple of years ago with Sam Howell. Also, part of this, too, has to do with, Josh used the term wounded, that UNC actually is wounded. Tony Grimes, I don't know if there's been an update in the last little bit while I was in Napland, but Tony Grimes is, I think, maybe going to play, but he's compromised with his stuff. And then Josh Downs' status, either he's either going to play injured or he's not going to play at all. And for what they are right now in Chapel Hill, the one known thing about the Heels, we know down the line Drake May is going to be great. The offense will be great. The defense should get better. But the one known commodity right now for UNC is how good Josh Downs is. One of the best in the country, game in, game out. That dude will be out there to help them win. But if he's not out there for game two in that environment, I think that might be why there was that point spread.
And here's where I think it has to be some sort of an injury, and that would make the most sense, Josh Downs, right? Because yesterday it was still 1.5 in favor of North Carolina. So this, and actually this morning it was 1.5 in favor of North Carolina. So we saw a 3-point flip in basically 6 hours. So at some point, it had to be something most recently. And I know what Mack Brown said. I thought Mack Brown was truth-telling on Monday. Carolina's not been good on the road, and this is going to be a difficult environment to play. But I also think that, in a way, having played a game already helps UNC. I think it gives them a little bit of an advantage because you've been on the field against somebody else, which – App clearly has not, but I do. I just think that the way App runs their offense is a bad matchup. Like, I don't know who's going to win the game. I just think there's going to be a lot of points scored in it, and whether it's whether Josh Downs is there or not, I think I like over 56.5, and I like that by the 10-minute mark of the third quarter.
Chase Bryce has been there for so long. I didn't look this up or not, but Chase Bryce has played so long in college football. I think he played against Drake May's father, didn't he?
He did, actually. He was he helped recruit Drake May's dad. He was already on the roster.
It's just going to be tough for little old Carolina. Man, you just feel bad for that plucky little upstart team. They're going to have – man, I don't know how they're going to stack up, an Alabama commit versus a guy on his third team.
Yeah, I don't think Chase Bryce is great, by the way. I think Chase Bryce is just effective, but I think that
he couldn't cut it at Duke, but man, he's going to slice up North Carolina.
Yeah, he has a better offensive line where he is now than he had at Duke. He had no chance at Duke at all. And I don't think, again, I don't think he's great. I think the way App runs their offense is more of the problem.
He's got the running back to help him. Their running game, their App doesn't have their receivers back. I think they have like 200 yards total in receivers coming back of the guys that are going to play. But they do have two backs coming back that are their guys. So that'll certainly help them.
All right, let's get to the other game. And Josh, by the way, and place your bets sometime with either Thursday or Friday, has East Carolina winning outright at plus 300, which, hey, that would be fun. I don't think it's going to happen. But big picture this for me, Travis. What are your expectations for this team and how they approach this game?
I think I was like a lot of people when you first look at the schedule for this year and you see what NC State brings back and the hype and then who they're playing, your first inclination is, oh my goodness, we know where this is headed. But I think that I sort of had to put the past to the side and that whatever happened to NC State 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we know what that program and their fans think in their heads about certain stuff. But now it's a different team. It might be the best state team we've ever seen over the course of a season. So all the NC State bleep that happens and all that, that doesn't matter tomorrow. I think ECU is going to play them relatively closer than probably within a touchdown maybe. But I think we're going to find out a lot about the mindset and why NC State's different tomorrow and why the past doesn't matter. I think they win tomorrow. And I think their season and how deep of a run they can go in terms of their greatness is that October 1st game at Clemson. If they get by that game, if they win in Death Valley, their schedule is not all that hard after that. So I'm not saying they are, but that's the test there. I think we're looking at maybe the best NC State team of my lifetime. But again, they have to bury those demons early, and I think they will tomorrow in Greenville.
Josh, what's the ceiling? What's the basement? What's the floor for this NC State team?
Probably 8 wins. The ceiling is.
You think the basement is 8 wins?
Yes, that's the basement. 8 wins for this NC State team. And I think the ceiling is probably 10 wins because I don't think this NC State team is better than last year's state team. I think something really resonated with me the week of the North Carolina-Virginia Tech game last year when I was talking to Mac and I asked him whether or not his program was at a place where Texas, you could lose multiple draft picks and it not hurt you. High draft picks and it not hurt you the year after that. And he said something I haven't forgotten. Only Clemson's at a place where you can lose top draft picks and it not seriously affect you. And NC State lost the top 10 pick at left tackle. And they lost their 2 top running backs. And they lost their best wide receiver, who might be the best NC State receiver we've seen in the last dozen years. I don't think, especially right out of the gate, that you immediately are that type of good when you lose that type of talent. And the fact, kind of like North Carolina going into that that was Blacksburg to open the season last year, stepping into that environment immediately in Greenville, America, that is going to be incredibly tough.
Yep.
When you talk about this is the best ECU team for sure that we've seen since Ruffin McNeil and Lincoln Riley were there. And unlike those ECU teams with Lincoln and Ruff there at the time, you're talking about a team that runs the football and actually plays defense, which they didn't do back then. And I actually just dug up this stat. I know this probably has no bearing on what we see tomorrow, but going back to the rivalry, there have been 12 head coaches from ECU that have played NC State historically. 12 head coaches have participated in this series on ECU's side. Mm-hmm. 10 of the first 11 have beaten NC State at some point. And Mike Houston hasn't done it. Scotty Montgomery beat NC State. And the only teams he beat were UConn and FCS schools. And now it's Mike Houston. This is his last shot until 2025 at NC State. They don't come back to Greenville until 2028, I believe. So, yeah, I got the Pirates winning this game outright. Give me the plus 3,000 or whatever it is.
300.
I think the Pirates win this game.
It's not plus 3,000. That would be.
I think, Adam, the winner of NC State Clemson, I think, has an inside track at the college football playoff. Here's why. We know Bama is going to be unbelievable. Ohio State, same thing. Georgia's that third team, and they're what, a tier below the other two, but in their own tier. After that, that four team, Notre Dame's going to lose tomorrow and lose again somewhere. They're probably out of this thing. Utah might be that team, but they could also lose tomorrow. Who knows? Then you've got the Big 12, Baylor, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. They'll probably be in the Michigan. I don't know about them. All the teams that are vying for that fourth spot, I ask you this. Obviously, Clemson's got the pedigree to make that run. But if NC State gets, like, they could be right there with these other teams. That fourth spot this year is going to get kind of wild, I think. And I think NC State's got a chance to be right there for it.
Travis Hancock and Josh Graham are joining us here on the roundtable on the Adam Gold Show. I probably asked the question of Josh in a bad way. Basement, yeah, I mean, the basement is that it all falls apart. They get some injuries. Something happens to Devin Leary, and, you know, they win six or seven games. I think their baseline, I think anything less than 10 wins is a bad season. Not a bad, it's just an okay season. I think this team, the schedule sets up for them to be 4-0 going to Clemson. Even if they lose to Clemson, there are two more games on their schedule, the last two at Louisville and at North Carolina, that a team as good as NC State should, you know, they will be toss-ups. I think the Wolfpack will be favored in all, but definitely other than the Clemson game, they might even be favored in those other two games if we get right down to it. I think this is, I keep using the term, the final exam. This is when we're going to find out if this coaching staff has a high end to it. I like Dave Dorn a lot, and I like him, even if they don't, you know, max out this season, I like him as the program's leader and head coach, as I think it's a very good program.
If you watch the NC State All-Access show that's been airing, you could tell that, you know, with like some of these other programs that we just named, like Bama and Georgia, every year they think they're going to be in a spot like they're in. They don't, I'm not saying they take it for granted, but they look at, hey, if we're not going to do it this year, we'll do it next year in terms of the playoffs. These NC State kids, especially the veterans, I think they know, hey, this is rarefied air here that we could be.
Yeah.
This is not like we're going to be here every year. We got to take advantage of our shot here in Raleigh while we have it.
I don't think there's any question. All right, I'm going to pivot. We're not going to talk Panthers because we don't have enough time to really give it its due, but I am going to ask each of you a question about, for you, Travis, a local guy, and for you, Josh, a fellow East Carolina Pirate. So I will start with you, Josh. Thoughts on Harold Varner leaving for LIV Golf?
The statement that he put out, because you and I have talked about it. How, if I hear one more golfer tell me that this is for growing the game one more time, I'm going to punch a bleeping wall. So for Harold to say, it's about the money. About the money. And I can deal with people being mad on radio shows and on Twitter. If it'll hurt that my reputation's hurt, but I'm doing this for my family. It's about the money. It made me think higher of Harold Varner than many of these others that are out there.
He didn't try to BS us. Travis, thoughts?
Yeah, the whole LIV Golf, PGA Golf thing, it's been wild to watch, right? And I've had this idea, if you really want to put a show together for golf with the Ryder Cup, we need to make this like wrestling at some point and just have a LIV team versus a PGA Tour team, and let's go.
I said that a few weeks ago. Yeah.
We talk about theater. Let's have a moment here where we start to think, hey, we want to make this about golf. Let's put those two teams up. Let's make two teams here, and let's put an event on and see what we can do. That's what I want to see.
It'll be better than the President's Cup, and you're getting the President's Cup in your neck of the woods at Quail Hollow in Charlotte in 3 weeks. And honestly, I mean, not really sure what the international team's going to look like. We know Cam Smith,
exactly.
Mark Leishman, Joaquin Neiman, the two of those guys, the first and the third that I just mentioned, they were automatically qualified on the team. Louis Oosthuizen would have been on that team. Maybe Brandon Grace. There's not a lot left there. Kind of surprised that Hideki Matsuyama is staying with the PGA Tour. At least he is saying that now. But like total respect for what Harold Varner said, because he said what we all know to be the real reason out loud, and he didn't try to hide it behind anything else. And I do think that it will use a lot of that money to fund a lot of the programs he's trying to do. All right, gentlemen, Travis Hancock and Josh Graham at T-Bone WFNZ in Charlotte. That's Travis at Josh Graham Radio in at Sports Hub Triad. I thank you very much. It was fun. We'll
thank
do it again.
You. I'll be live tweeting Duke Temple at 7:30 p.m. this evening for my new followers. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
Boone. I'll be in Boone, and only one of the two follows you just mentioned is a must-follow, according to Adam Gold.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that you weren't a must-follow, but that's fine.
You said what was it?
You can take it any way you like.
What's a must-follow?
You twisted Mac Brown's words, so we can take it any way you like. All right, man.
I don't want to see friends fighting. I don't want to see friends fighting.
Oh, no. That's all good. All good in the hood. All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Later.
All right, when we come back, as we have been doing throughout the lead up to the start of the NFL season, NFL Cities Tour, we head to H-Town next.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcasts. We haven't had a chance to mention it, but today it's really my fault because, like, I have a microphone every segment. Spencer Strider, 16 strikeouts for the Braves.
Yeah.
Last night.
Braves record.
Yes. As many good pitchers as the Braves have had.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised that 16 is the record, but 16's a lot.
Right? It's a lot of strikeouts.
It's a lot of strikeouts. With considering that, you know, yes, Greg Maddux, who wasn't necessarily a huge strikeout guy, Smoltz was, Glavin wasn't. Phil Niekro was a pretty big strikeout guy. Mm-hmm. And as a knuckleballer, you would think that there were games where he just struck out a ton. And back in the day, if you could go nine innings, you went nine innings. I'm a little surprised, but I've been saying this all along. I know the Braves are three behind the Mets in the National League East, three games in the loss column behind the Mets, and there is a three-game set left, I believe, the second-to-last series of the season in Atlanta. So winning the division is still there for the Braves. They're the last team with a winning record the Mets will face between now and the end of the season. The rest of it is all pulp for the Mets. They're done. They just played the Dodgers. Mets took two or three from Los Angeles at Citi Field, and the only winning team left on the Mets schedule is Atlanta. So, but this doesn't really matter. I mean, baseball is baseball. Anybody can beat anybody. I think we all understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But Atlanta's good. I said it before. I think the Dodgers are off the charts. Nobody can see them. The Dodgers could clinch this by the end of next week. It could be done. The division could be over by the end of next week. They lead by 19 games in the loss column.
That's a lot.
That is a lot, yes. But the Braves or the Mets, I mean, throw a blanket over them. I don't think there's a big difference. I think the only real difference is at the top of the starting rotation between DeGrom and Scherzer and whoever the two best starters are for the Braves. But the Braves have quality starting pitching. Like, there's just not a lot difference between the two teams. And I hope they meet. I hope we see a Mets Braves playoff series. I think it'll be a blast.
I'm for it.
I am as well, and I'm a Mets fan. I have no hatred at all for the Atlanta Braves. All right, let's go to Houston, shall we? NFL City Tour.
Yes. All right, big thing you have to do in Houston. Space. Got to go to the Space Center of Houston and the Johnson Space Center.
Right?
Yeah, you got to go to the Space Center.
Okay, that's fine.
I always wanted to go to Space Camp when I was a kid. When I would watch Nickelodeon shows like Guts and all that stuff, like, oh, Space Camp ad. Ma, I want to go to Space Camp. Never got to go. Okay. I always want to go to Space Camp.
After seeing American Pie, I wanted to go to Band Camp.
That's fair. I respect that. Did you go?
No. No, I was already an adult by the time. Like, I mean, I'm an old person.
Okay.
American Pie. Is it American Pie?
Yeah.
Or American. It's American Pie.
Yeah. You're right.
So,
Came out in 99, I think.
Yeah. I was 10 years out of college.
I was in middle school.
You suck. Why'd you do that?
I'm just pointing it out. Just pointing it out.
All right, fine.
But yeah, Space Center is the, you got to go check those out while you're in Houston. Houston's a really big city, by the way.
It is sprawling. There's so much of Houston.
Yes, it is actually a pretty large city. I think it's actually the fourth largest now, I think.
Third or fourth, yeah. Like,
it's obviously New York, LA, I think Chicago, and I think Houston four.
But also in terms of land mass.
Yeah, that too.
Houston is enormous. Like, having been to Houston and having been to Atlanta, Atlanta is a sprawling city too, mm-hmm. right? I think Houston actually has also more land mass. It is a massive city. So, like, it's not a walkable city, Houston.
No, it's not. Right? It's not like
New York.
You
been to Boston?
I have.
Boston is a very walkable city. Mm-hmm. Houston? No. Not a chance. Not a chance. But I think Houston's cool. Hot, actually.
Well, it's, yes, but that makes sense.
But cool it's at the same time.
Southeastern Texas. That makes perfect sense. Check out Memorial Park if you actually want to get outdoors and, you know, get in some green space. Urban green spaces inside of cities are actually sometimes hard to come by.
Yes.
But, yes, check out Memorial Park when you're out there as well. A lot of stuff that you want to go do as well. Check out not only the Space Centers, but the Museum of Natural Science apparently is really awesome there. Museum of Fine Arts, also the Houston Zoo, because big cities have to have zoos.
Every big city has a zoo.
As they should.
I mean, even like...
And they're fun.
There's two zoos in New York City. There's a Central Park Zoo.
That's right, there
is. And then
is.
There's the Bronx Zoo, which is the big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Central Park Zoo, of course, is where Madagascar was filmed.
Oh, it's, yes, that's right.
See how people get right. Animated movie.
Yes,
people.
I know. Ride the carousel when you're in Central Park, by the way. Also, place to check out, the Art Car Museum.
Art Car?
Yes.
Okay.
Art Car is not a person.
Right, I figured that.
Yes.
I thought you were going to say Art Carney for a minute, but
no.
You probably don't even know who that is.
I don't.
Okay.
That's fine. But the Art Car Museum is exactly what it is. It's a bunch of cars that are just decorated.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I can get with that.
It's a cool thing to go check out. But also something you have to go do, get to go check out the rodeo in Houston.
The last
like livestock time, show and rodeo in Houston, gotta go.
The last time I was there, I believe it was before, I'm not sure the Astrodome is still standing. But I think the last time, either that or the previous time I was in Houston, they were using the Astrodome for like a rodeo slash livestock show slash monster truck rally or something.
Sounds right. Sounds about right.
The eighth wonder of the world, the Astrodome.
Is it the eighth? I thought that was
No, they called it that. Or the eighth, I think it was the eighth. I think they called it the eighth wonder of the world, even though it really was. Because it was the first dome.
Yeah.
Oh, my friend, our friend, Wes Durham, says that the Astrodome is still standing.
Oh, it's still standing. Well, then go to the Astrodome.
No, don't.
Go to the Astrodome.
It's just in a
It's the eighth wonder of the world. Go check out the Astrodome.
There's nothing there.
All right.
Nothing worth seeing.
Apparently the USS Texas?
I don't know.
Actually, I take that back. The USS Texas, actually, it's outside of Houston, so never mind. We're not leaving Houston. Never mind.
Wes does say Texas's largest flea market is Astrodome.
Is the Astrodome.
Man, if you want to get stuff at Texas's largest flea market,
go to the Astrodome.
Go to the Astrodome. That is hysterical.
More reason to go to the Astrodome.
Oh,
go check it out. And apparently, that's where the movie Friday Night Lights, where the championship game took place, apparently was the Astrodome.
Oh, so, man, look. My recollection of the Astrodome is two things. One, Game Never 6, been. 1986, Mets and Astros in the National League Championship Series. One of the greatest, most epic baseball games ever played. And any highlights of Earl Campbell.
Oh, okay.
If you want to just laugh, go watch Earl Campbell highlights. For those kids who are younger and don't remember what Earl Campbell was like, go check out Earl Campbell highlights on YouTube and laugh. He was like a bowling ball.
Okay.
He was awesome.
Also, one thing you have to do when you're in Texas, you have to get a Texas barbecue, which is basically based around brisket.
Brisket
is the go-to down in North Carolina. Yeah, we talked about it when in Arlington.
Yes,
but when obviously in North Carolina, pork is the main.
I had pork barbecue last night.
That good for you. Yeah. North Carolina, it's pork. Texas, brisket is the basis of it. Now, obviously, they'll do some other stuff, but nothing really is complete down there in terms of barbecue if there's no brisket on the tray.
All right.
But the best place you got to go to.
Let's hear it.
The best donuts. It's the place called Best Donuts in Houston.
Self-explanatory.
Exactly. It's called Best Donuts. They open up at 4:30 in the morning.
Well,
yeah,
people need their donut fix at 4:30.
Yeah, they do. But here
at 4:30,
yeah,
are you
for donuts? I'll get up.
No. At 4:30, are you going home or leaving at 4:30?
Yes, I'm leaving somewhere and going home.
Okay, so you are headed home at 4:30 if you're stopping at Best Donuts.
They also have croissants as well, so you can get a breakfast croissant. They also have tacos. Breakfast tacos and biscuits.
I like
that. So you get a bacon, egg, and cheese taco while you're there, too.
Very good.
And kolaches.
Excellent. All good choices.
Biscuits as well. But also just really good-looking donuts.
What an array of donut options.
I know.
Are on this list. What an array of donut options.
By the way, the Stan's Donuts, so you told you about, was really kicked off this whole donut thing or the idea for it. I bought a t-shirt. Came in yesterday.
Excellent. How come you haven't worn it yet?
Because I need to wash it.
You wash your t-shirt before you wear it?
When it's brand new, yeah.
All right, it's fine. I'm not knocking it. It's a very adult thing to do.
Well, yeah, I don't know what's on it.
So I have not incorporated that practice myself, but
okay. That's fair.
I totally respect it.
Yeah.
All right, good look at Houston. On Tuesday, Nolens.
Yes.
With the most overrated donut in the history of donuts.
Wow.
The beignet.
Bold statement.
Just a fun.
Are we actually going to consider it a donut or just beignet? Just,
I mean, that's really what you got to talk about, the beignet.
We're going to talk about the beignets in New Orleans, but I'm not sure I'm going to classify that as a donut.
Okay, good. Different donuts.
I will recommend people going to both Café Beignet and Café Dumont.
Coffee's awful. Yeah, it is a landmark. There's no question.
The coffee's
terrible.
Yeah, well, it's.
And the beignet is simply a funnel cake.
Is it like Dunkin'?
Dunkin' coffee is very good. I don't understand why you keep slamming Dunkin'. Tremendous coffee and excellent donuts. All right, do we have time for a brief rewind?
Very, very brief.
Okay. Today's show has been about 75%, maybe more, about two football games, NC State at East Carolina, and North Carolina heading up to the mountain to take on App State. In this particular rewind, we will handle the former. Wolfpack headed to Greenville, where they are all-time 1-4. Not great. Luke DeCock of the News and Observer, who is headed out for that game, basically says this is NC State's chance.
As I wrote this week, if not now for NC State, when? Yep. I mean, this is the best chance NC State's going to have to do anything of note in football. You can't screw that up in week one by losing at East Carolina. I should say you can't. You don't.
Right.
You certainly can. And, and Mike Houston's a terrific coach. He's had time at ECU. This was a team that I think I would have picked to beat BC in the Military Bowl last year if that hadn't been COVIDed out. They've got a quarterback, which at that level, sort of at the Conference USA level, you can fake a lot of things, right? You can develop guys into linemen and defensive backs that got overlooked in recruiting. You can get little fast running backs and big slow running backs and fit them into your offense. And you can recruit tight ends who, are undersized or too slow and turn them into weapons, but you can't fake quarterback. And ECU with Holt Nailers is not faking quarterback. So I think that's a huge advantage. I expect NC State to win, but I would be the least shocked person in the world if they did screw this up. I hope, without rooting for anybody, I hope NC State does not. As cool as it would be to see the atmosphere in Greenville if East Carolina wins. We so rarely have football seasons of note around here. It's obviously basketball territory. NC State has a chance to really do something. on a national scale, and to screw that up in week one by losing in Greenville would be unfortunate. You know, if you go into Clemson and lose, fine, but don't, not this way. So that's sort of my take on that. NC State should win, but Lord knows it whether or not NC State will win is a completely different question.
I agree with that. Again, I always want to preface this. Like, I think that East Carolina can have a very good year. NC State is bringing a top 15 team. That doesn't mean that a top 15 team will always win in Greenville. Again, we know it doesn't always happen. And we know East Carolina, especially at home, has been historically very good against ACC teams, whether it's State or Carolina or Virginia Tech. Right? They have won a bunch of games.
1 minute.
I think this is more about NC State. But if East Carolina's defense is good, then it's going to be a heck of a game. I have the under. That's what I know, under 51.5. All right, real quick before I cough myself out of the off the show. Dennis put out a poll this week, or today rather. Who wins Saturday? In the App UNC poll, 67%, two-thirds, went App State. Interesting. Interesting. I just think there's going to be a ton of points. And who wins Saturday? NC State at ECU, 74% went Wolfpack. Basically, 70, three-quarters of the poll.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.